depressed. We're now recording. So, hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And here with me today, we have a very special guest from Margaret West Production, Cam Banks. Cam, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Excellent. Excellent. Really appreciate you taking the time. And also, we have a special co-host, Stacey Montgomery. Stacey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
Now, Stacey, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a frequent poster on RPG.net, right?
That's true, under the name Princess Daisy.
I thought that was you. Okay, I want to make sure. Okay, well, hey, thanks for you very much for joining. You're kind of our resident Smallville expert in the house tonight.
That sounds like a silly thing to say when sitting next to Cam, so to speak. But,
well, you're the one to ask interesting questions because I'm still learning the Cortex system myself.
Okay.
And we're talking about Smallville because Smallville, the Watchtower Report, will be coming out in PDF any time now, is what you're saying, Kim.
As soon as we can get back from approvals, and assuming that what we've done doesn't need a massive overhaul, which I don't think it's going to need.
Okay. Well, hey, let's just open up the, start with the basic question for our listeners. What is the Smallville Watchtower Report, and how is this different from, say, the Smallville Yearbook, the other supplement?
Yeah, so the yearbook is kind of a more of a setting expansion, right? It's designed to help you run a game set in high school, which doesn't seem like a very broad kind of topic, but actually anyone who's seen any TV involving high school kids or teenagers knows it's got so much copious amounts of room for gaming that just one book by itself is almost not enough to cover it.
Okay.
That was a big feature for the show, too, for four seasons, and so we wanted to make a big deal about that and put this book out since we knew that the rule book wasn't going to be covering the teenage stuff. It was mostly the 20-something version of Smallville that, since it went for 10 years, at least 6 years of that were after high school. So the Watchtower Report, though, is a different kind of book because we wanted to give folks who had already been playing the game some expansions to the rules and expansions to the kinds of things that were in the rule book that weren't setting specifically. It also gave us an opportunity to catch up the show coverage so that the core rule book was after season 9, and we finished off the show just this year with season 10, and so we have all the season 10 update material. Also with the Watchtower Report. For those who are fans of Smallville, you get to have your last season episode guide and characters and other stats.
Let's see, the last season, that's when you had the JSA joining them, right?
That was the year before. No, 2 years before that. The big deal with season 10 was Darkseid.
Okay.
And so, yeah, a lot of the JSA people came back and lots of major, huge guest stars. Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, for example, were also featured that year.
I'm a bad Smallville fan. My girlfriend is a huge fan, has all the DVDs. I'm kind of catching it in dribs and drabs as she makes me watch it. But, okay, well, forgive me for having the seasons mixed up.
Oh, no.
Let's give some shout-outs before I forget. I'm looking at your Amazon.com listing for this book, and the authors I've got listed, and I know Amazon.com is not always the most reliable source of information, but I've got Josh Roby, Joe Blomquist, Roberta Olson, Mary Blomquist, you yourself, sir, and Tierra Lynn Agresta as the authors on this one.
Yeah, it's the same list from the core book. Not actually, not as up to date. No, Josh is, in fact, one of the people who worked on this book. He did not work so much on the yearbook. And so Roberta Olson and some of the folks who were on the core book moved, and we did some work with them on the high school yearbook, while Josh and a guy who goes by the name of Jack Norris, who may be well-known to some people,
he's been on the podcast a few times, yeah.
Yes, he helped out with a lot of the characters and things and villains section for the Watchtower Report. So between Jack, Josh, and a guy named Jason Corley, who I think some of you have also known from podcasts and other RPG forums, Jason did a little bit for us too as a guest spot. The three J's and myself, we all pitched in and made that book happen.
Okay. You mentioned some awesome new rules and whatnot. Could you give us a preview of what you're talking about there?
Right. Well, the Watchtower Report has chapters that all start off by saying that the titles of the chapters are things like expanding this, expanding that. So, for example, it has expanding assets, and that chapter's got a lot more about how to do fun things with abilities and distinctions, the two meaty sort of sections on the character sheet for Smallville. So a few more superpowers for those who didn't have enough from the core rulebook. And
what superpowers? Tell. Give us that hint.
Let's see if I can pull it up and have it give you some sneak advanced preview stuff. None of this is particularly mind-blowing to a lot of people, but for those of you who've been waiting for it, I'm sure it will be. So let me see if I can find it. It's one of the benefits of having this on PDF in advance after putting it together for so long. The other thing, too, is that the sections, not only do they introduce new versions of things, for example, extra powers and things, but they also talk about ways you can use them differently, more advice for how to use them, that kind of stuff. Let's have a look here.
So maybe sort of some Game Master guide kind of direction.
Right, and one thing that we often had coming back as feedback from the core book was people would ask us questions about what does this mean, and I wasn't sure about the clarification on this, you know. And we made our best effort to include as many of the sort of questions as a sort of troubleshooting component. So if you were lost on certain things, you could maybe find the answers in this, just so long as we remember to put them in here.
Okay. Well, cool. All right. So, Stacy, hang on. You did you dodge the question about superpowers? I don't remember.
No. I'm still finding it. I gotta make my way. I was just talking while this was going on. Let's have a look here. Okay. New abilities. Oh, there's a couple more heritages too. For example, like Metamorph is one of them. So you can have people who change from one to another. Let's have a look here. New abilities. 82. All right. I'm not really trying to drag this out.
It's not a problem.
Okay, so Force Constructs, for example. You want to do a Green Lantern-style character, you could use this in there.
Very nice.
Yeah. Summoning is another one. And Size Alteration, which wasn't even remotely considered in Smallville core book, but some people want to be able to grow to terrifying proportions or shrink. And so, yeah. Look at that. Time travel is another good one. Things that were complicated and we didn't really go into because there weren't a whole lot of characters in the show that had these abilities. But we realized there were some gaps in the list. And so the Watchtower Report does, a fairly good job of covering that up. And then also showing you how if you still don't have enough of what you want, giving you some advice as the Watchtower to create more for the game.
Cam, can you give us an example of the sort of, you said there was a sort of rules, details, and explanations that might give people more insight into the Smallville rule system. And I know, you know, the Smallville rule system is a little different than stuff that maybe some of us grognards were used to. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could share an insight from the new material.
Well, there's a whole chapter called Expanding Play, and that's mostly where that kind of stuff comes in. We talk about the role of Watchtower, the difference between collaboration and competition, because the game does put the players against each other, although it mainly puts the characters, the leads, so to speak, against each other. The players are supposed to be getting along pretty well. And then there's a bunch of information about how to create parallel structure stories, a lot of the stuff that maybe goes hand-in-hand with the information on setting up scenes and framing scenes and designing episodes. There's more of that same goodness. And one of the biggest contributions that Jason Cawley brought to this book is this idea of sideliner characters. And a sideliner is when you have, maybe you've been playing for about six sessions and everyone's getting a little bit, you know, stir-crazy, and you want to try and focus on an area of the setting that none of your characters are actually focused on, but which will be important to them. So you could have this whole episode where they're playing different characters who are total sideliners.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. And
I've seen that done in campaigns, but I've never seen it sort of done out explicitly in a rule book.
Yeah, well, the way it starts out is you identify what specific kinds of traits on your normal characters will be sort of enhanced or built out of to create these other sort of sideline characters. And even if you never go back to them again after the episode, you have them. It's kind of like those webisodes where you see characters who aren't on the show normally.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's almost like what Ars Magica did with Troop Play.
A little bit like that. Okay. So, for example, you might play the people who are at some remote LexCorp or LitherCorp foundation building, and they're all trying to do something and going across purposes. And the consequences of what they do may play into the larger storyline, but there would have been no real good way to set up that without having this happen first. So if you're thinking of in terms of your campaign as a spin-off show for Smallville or whatever setting you want to set it in, this is that freebie downloadable content or stuff you have in the DVD set when you get it.
Okay.
Have you, I'm sorry, but have you thought about using that kind of a sideliner character as a, or setting as a flashback?
Oh, it would work just fine for that too, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. See, that sounds like something that would be really fun and useful. Hey, people are going to want this supplement.
I hope so. That's the whole point of making it, yes.
Well, speaking of that, someone's going to ask, so I'll be the guy. When are we talking about PDF being available?
Well, as I said earlier, I think the main thing that keeps us from putting it out right away is that we want to make sure that everything is completely kosher with Warner Brothers. And that mainly involves images and the use of images and the way that we've done them in the book. So there's a ton of photo stuff, as you remember, from the original Smallville book and then the high school yearbook. And all of it is needs to be looked after by the folks that are licensing. So I don't know how long it will be. I'm hoping not longer than a week or two from now, if that's the case, you know, before the end of November. But I would say safely December.
So just in time for Christmas.
Absolutely, yes. You can give yourself some drive-through RPG gift certificates and pick it up from there, or RPG Now, whichever you want.
Well, cool, cool. Well, hey, I've got some questions from Twitter, if you're up for that.
Love it.
Grimshade, who is a.k.a. David Thomas, had a couple of questions. Let's see. He's got a three-part post. MWP games really nail the essence of the source material and their licensed products, even more with Cortex Plus. What is Cam's design What is Cam's design philosophy for really staying true to a licensed product?
I think it starts out by looking at what the license is for and what kind of, you know, the people expect when they take that as a show or a property or comic book or whatever you've got. What is it about? What's the draw? What's the appeal? And I think for shows like Leverage, the appeal was, you know, the kind of escapist stuff where everything's high-stakes action. The characters typically don't fail, and if they do fail, it's only because they're getting life more complicated. And that kind of the show's themes and the license's themes really do settle how you go with the mechanics after that. I think I've said it before, every Cortex Plus game is more or less built from the ground up. We don't ever take a game that we previously made and just change up, you know, the image anymore. I decided that wasn't going to work for the majority of the things we were interested in. And so from that point, since we started Smallville and Leverage, that's how we've been doing it.
Okay, and he had a follow-up question. He was asking, have you given any thoughts or would you like to ever design non-licensed settings?
Well, yeah, I mean, Dragon Brigade, which is a game that's coming out before Marvel does, cross fingers. That game is based, it's still licensed, it's based on Margaret's own books, but it's a different situation in many ways because it doesn't come from a third party license, so we have to go and acquire and so on, you know, because Margaret owns the company and also writes these books with her writing partner. We have access to her all the time. We can sort of make sure it's the game she wants to put out. But I personally would love to work on some completely original stuff, but I just wouldn't know where to start. I think I've been doing this licensing and adaptation stuff for such a long time, since I started working on Dragonlance, for example, that to do something that has no didn't previously exist is very difficult for me to think of.
Okay. We'll go ahead. Have you got any ideas in the back of the, you know, head percolating about genres you'd like to try, or is it all kind of just undiscovered country?
Lots of it. Someone said, well, what am I going to do now that I got, you know, the opportunity to work on Marvel? And I said, I have no idea what could come next. I mean, there are so many things that when you're growing up as a gamer and a fan of geek stuff that you think, well, gosh, I'd love to work on this thing. And then it comes along and says, here you go, you can work on it now. And you go, well, okay, I guess it could die. I mean, that's pretty much it. But, no, I mean, whatever comes up next, I'd be happy to see it. I'm a huge fan of all kinds of things. And every year, television brings new shows that you either think you're going to love and you end up hating, or think you'd hate and end up loving. So I think we always have this stream of constant inspiration for new games.
Anything you're watching right now that you'd recommend?
What am I watching that I recommend? Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, I love The Walking Dead. That's a fantastic show.
That is a good one.
I was a big fan of the comic books before the show came out. So it's been fun for me looking at how they adapt the comic books to the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that kind of thing quite often. If I've read a book and the movie comes out based on the book, I'm kind of stuck because I want to enjoy the movie, but I often find myself comparing things back and forth. It makes it interesting because I really enjoy the Marvel movies that have come out, and I have had less of a problem with what they've done with those than, for example, with movies in the past, like, I don't know, The Green Hornet's a good one, too. Anyone who's a fan of Green Hornet typically hated that movie. So,
what did you feel about it?
I took my son to see it. We had a special preview that we were given in advance and we could see it for free. So I didn't invest any money in seeing it. So I thought that, you know, with that element taken out of the picture, I could just go and have a good time. And I don't know if it's that appropriate for a 9-year-old to see it, but it was he had a lot of fun. I liked it. I liked Seth Rogen. I liked him in previous movies, but it was a weird fit. I think they made some choices that they could have left out or added in, and it would have been better. But I don't think it was the complete disaster that some folks have painted it as.
I think your enjoyment of that movie was directly related to how much you like Seth Rogen.
Yes.
And personally, I like him, so I thought it was fun, but I understand, so, you know, if you're not a Seth Rogen fan, that could be an obstacle for you. So,
it's hard to be a Green Hornet fan because there isn't a iconic version of Green Hornet. I mean, the movies, the Old Republic serials and the TV show, they're all kind of over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the show, let's face it, was not a high moment in television. Or Green Hornet.
I was listening to, I don't remember which podcast it was. I think it was, might have been The Walking Eye. But they were talking about the Green Hornet movie. Oh, no, it was Sean Suntress's Word Balloon podcast. And he had a guest on there, and they were talking about this. And he was saying that a lot of people only remember it from the guest spots that they had on the Batman TV show.
Yeah.
And that is my sole memory of Green Hornet before.
Right.
This
and those people weren't as worried about this movie because that was their own experience. They're like, oh, is that all it was? Oh, cool, a movie, great. I remember that when it was Bruce Lee and that other guy who we all forgot. So it's very interesting. Whatever you bring to the movie, and this is kind of part of my problem, is that if I've got plenty of stuff to come with it going in, I'm going to find myself more and more critical of how they do it.
Yeah, I didn't have much, but like Battlestar Galactica. You know, I had some vague memories of the 1970s TV show and it not being all that great.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did the reimagining, I mean, there's some things that caught you by surprise, like Starbuck, you know, being a woman. But it was just so much better than what I remembered. I didn't have any problem getting on board with that right away.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I prefer the retelling version of it to the original show, which I liked when I was a kid, when it was back on in the very early 80s, I think it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I grew up, and so I kind of don't like the old one anymore. I had some very long conversations, sometimes heated, with people who, when we were working on the Battlestar game for Margaret Weiss Productions, they were saying, why would you even bother? Why didn't you get a license for the original show? And I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
No, I think that raises an interesting question, because – somewhere between the Battlestar Galactica game and the Smallville game, say,
mm-hmm.
you kind of went off the rails in a very delightful way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder, one thing, although I've heard you talk and I've seen you write about the result
mm-hmm.
of that, I don't know anything about, and our listeners at home, I think, would like to know more about the process. What was the moment? I've always had this image, and perhaps it's a bad sign for my mental health that I've imagined things like this. But I've always had this image of you sort of sitting across the, you know, the table from some DC executive or some Warner executive, sort of going, well, I've got this idea. I'm going to go in a new direction, or maybe just trying to convince your own team at Margaret Weiss. Actually, I'm going to go in a whole other direction this time. And it seems like it must get easier after that. But that first time when you sort of said, well, you know, I want to do more than just the sort of standard adaptation of the Cortex system. I want to try to capture more than just the characters, but the actual way of the flow of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of wonder, what was that moment for you, and when did you have to tell someone?
It's funny you say that, because in many ways, I think I spent a long, long time doing D20-based game material. For me, it seemed like a long amount of time. I did Dragonlance for 4 or 5 years with Margaret Weiss Productions. And before then, I mean, since 2000, we were playing D&D 3rd edition all the time. It was all my game groups were doing this, that we didn't do anything else. Other than Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the 1st edition, which Jim Butcher would run, because we all used to be in the same gaming group back in Pennsylvania. And Jim would run Warhammer, and I would run 3rd edition, and our game group would switch back and forth. And that was
I recognized a Pennsylvanian accent there.
I'm actually from New Zealand, so that's exactly... I may have picked up a twang from 10 years being in Pennsylvania, but no, it's funny how that kind of changed a lot of my mindset, because prior to that I was mostly playing games like Amber Dice's Roleplay and Feng Shui and games which were the foundation for what later on became a huge chunk of the indie game movement. Right, these are inspirational games to a lot of people who are doing story games now. But I sort of stepped away from that and started playing D&D all the time. And I was friends with Rob Donahue and Fred Hicks and those folks who are now who make up Evil Hat prior to that, because we were all, you know, online Amber Mush gamers. And so I was with them while we were doing Amber and Feng Shui and all that stuff. And I think in some ways I felt like I'd left that particular circle of thought to do D20. And it wasn't until I started, you know, working on something that wasn't D20 that I realized I missed it. I really missed the sort of more freeform stuff, the different kind of way of handling things with different quirky mechanics. And I think it was I was in charge of putting together the Serenity Big Damn Heroes Handbook. And I was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was going to be hiring some people. And my good friend Clark Valentine, who had managed to get himself very neck deep in indie stuff through some of our shared friends, said, I would love to write this thing, but I'm not sure if you'd be okay with me doing it this way. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, I want to do the whole thing with the crew relationships on the ship. I want to talk about how a crew gets along with each other. I said, it sounds fantastic. We didn't have anything like that in the core book for Serenity. This whole book is going to be full of neat ideas that you can bring to your game. It'll be completely mind-blowing. And that's what we did. We just sort of sneaked it under the book with all these sort of weird indie ideas. And that's when the germ kind of sort of caught on. I think I pretty much decided from that point on that I had to start introducing more story narrative stuff into these games to make them work closer to what the license wanted.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, you capture, especially for, you know, more narrative-driven shows, you know, you capture a whole other dynamics that you just don't get from hit points.
It's true, yeah.
Well, it's backwards, if I may say so. It's delightfully backwards. I always said I was a big GURPS fan. I have all the GURPS books. I believe I have them all, which is disturbing. And you can make buildings out of them. And, you know, there's a sort of a central conceit, which is that even though each book is an adaptation of something or a setting of some kind, it's always GURPS. That is, there's always the idea, and now our GURPS characters will go to the Bridge of the Enterprise or the Valley of Mordor or whatever it is. But with Cortex Plus, you've taken it the other way around, which, by the way, is genius. And that's, you know, that's what makes these games so interesting.
Well, thanks. I think I can totally see the reason why that's appealing, though, you know, and I think everyone can. If your game group doesn't want to keep relearning different rules each week for a different game, if you're playing D&D and then you go ahead and play Traveller and then you play something else, for a long time we had this idea that it made more sense to have a consistent set of rules beneath all of that. And I think that's pretty much what drove the whole D20 market. And GURPS was already there. I mean, they've been in it for years, right? And so even things like Rollmaster, Spacemaster, whatever you want, Master, this idea that you had to have a set of rules that would maybe be the holy grail and resolve all your problems. And there are still people who fervently believe that's how you do it, and I think that's great to have that sort of available to people. But I think I gave up on that idea. I think I stopped thinking it was going to work. Probably when I was, you know, working on the whole Big Damn Heroes book and then Supernatural and stuff, I thought there's some things that we're missing because we aren't taking enough of a risk in one or two directions. And Smallville was a huge, big leap off this boat. I really think so.
I'm glad you had a better experience with Amber than I did. I liked the ideas of Amber, but I played it with all my D&D friends, and we were trying to kill each other within like 5 minutes. I think we missed the whole point of what Zelazny was even doing in his novels. Oh. It was really, hey, how can we use these? It was a disaster. Hey, glad it worked out for you guys, and it's helped inform some really interesting design decisions in a variety of stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't have messed the dice with anymore, so... but yeah, the rest of it, it's a keeper.
Well, Stacy and I are in a playtest group for the Marvel RPG. And we've kind of been on a hiatus, but we went through the original breakout that was in the New Avengers where Electro... boy, what's the name of that prison, Stacy?
The Raft.
The Raft, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then following that, the excursion to the Savage Land. But yeah, I was playing Beast, and you were Cyclops?
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, okay.
So yeah, someone was Cyclops there, wasn't there?
No, Cyclops was a pilot.
We did have someone else. We did have a Cyclops for the landing, which is good because you always want an X-Man to be flying your plane unless you know you have the faintest notion what.
And I'm happy to report that we made the first successful landing ever in the history of the Savage Land.
Yeah, I was going to say I didn't mark it up in my review of the playtest, but it did seem to be a flaw in the rules that it was possible for Cyclops to land a plane.
Yeah. They landed the plane in New Avengers. It just had there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex crashed into it right after that happened.
That's kind of, we had a T-Rex attack us shortly after we left the plane, so.
Exactly.
It was probably your fault.
Are you blaming me personally?
I accept this without question.
We
were awfully noisy, and wearing bright costumes.
Yeah, this is true. And Beast kind of always vaguely smells like cat, so it's, you know, it's hard to be too stealthy.
So having had a shot at the playtest, what did you folks think of it?
Stacey, you want to go first?
I want to say this gently. I think it's genius, but in many ways, I think what's important, and if it was my job, I should be asking questions and not, you know, selling the product because I'm not getting paid, and that's something we could talk about, by the way. But I think what really stands out for me is that I can understand the rules. I was something of a critic of Smallville. In that when I first bought Smallville, I was very excited about it, and I took it home. And on the first read-through, I have to say, I turned to the person who was sitting next to me and said, boy, I bet this game is really good.
Yes. Well,
but it didn't quite...
this experience depends on the person reading it, but there are definitely things and concepts, even in the way that we approached it, that on first reading it may not have made a whole lot of sense for some folks, and I completely sympathize with you on that. So,
I don't think that's going to be a problem with Marvel Heroes. I think you guys have come a long way in presenting the information, and I first saw this breakthrough, if I may say so, from my perspective, in the Dragon Brigade Quick Start.
Right.
Which is gorgeously written. And and it takes away, I think, my big criticism, which I think up until then has been, you know, those guys are geniuses, but it's hard to tell. It was really a leverage where I sort of understood, because leverage, I think, is a simpler property and a simpler rule set. And with the leverage rules, I was able to catch it right away and go, hey, I understand this, and I see where they're going. But now, when I read the Dragon Brigade Quick Start, when I read the material I've seen for Marvel Heroes, I think you guys have learned, how to present this material, I think, much more clearly, so that it's not just for... people of your intellectual stature, but also for, you know, those of us who are perhaps, you know, more of a correspondence course type.
I will say that I think what's helped me in getting it to work better, there's been two reasons. The first thing is I continue to get more and more hits over the head from Amanda Valentine, our fabulous editor, who has been responsible for most of the editing on products that I've been working with Margaret Weiss, with occasional assistance from the mighty Ryan Macklin. But I think Amanda's insistence that we get these things through to people without being obfuscated by, you know, strange language has been instrumental there. The second thing is the feedback. We continue to get feedback from people even after we put games out. The playtesting like you folks have been doing has been amazing. The feedback reports and commentary has been great, but we even get people coming back and saying, well, I bought the game, I played the game, I love the game, but page 96 makes no sense, you know, and I'll put all of this down on my big list of things to fix next time we do something. So if there's any one thing I want to be remembered for is that we actually listen to our audience. When we do something new, we make sure we don't do the same thing all over again and completely, you know, ignore people. Because we don't want to do that.
Well, I think what you're going to be remembered for is really listening to the source material, which I think you guys have not so much with the mechanics, because, there have been innovative mechanics in the past, but so many people have, taken a source material like something like Leverage or Marvel Comics and given a fairly straightforward and, I won't say pedestrian, but straightforward way of adapting it, and the idea, you guys are the property listeners. You really sort of listen to, you know, what is Smallville, what is Leverage, and I think that's really wonderful.
Thanks, I appreciate that. That's what we're going for, and
It's also annoying because when you see it, you sort of go, boy, it's the sort of true genius is when you read it and you go, I could have thought of that.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you didn't. And in my case, whenever I see this stuff, I go, well, these guys aren't so smart. I could have thought of that.
Right.
But didn't.
Well, if we make you feel any better about yourself, that's always a plus, too, right?
Absolutely.
We're going to call you the Property Whisperer from now on, Kim.
Nice.
I'm going to wish I'd given that name more thought.
Now, for me in the playtest, I'm coming from more of a... Icons was really my first taste outside of an abortive experience with Amber, kind of getting into the story games.
Yep.
So Marvel RPG has kind of been a, an eye-opener for me in a lot of ways. I'm still honestly kind of feeling my way around. I'm really excited about it, and I'm a huge Marvel fanboy, so there's definitely that. But I'm still kind of figuring out how it works, and it's kind of cool seeing the process, you know, different things we add in, figuring out. You know, we had a long discussion about the initiative system after our last session, and, you know, different ideas being bandied about, and I know I don't want to give away too much. I'll just throw out the name if that's okay, or I can cut it later if you want. The Doom Pool is kind of a cool concept.
I think I've mentioned the Doom Pool in public, the Doom Pool. Well, probably my favorite thing that we've added, in fact, it's very similar to the Trouble Pool in Smallville, but it goes a whole lot longer in one direction than that does. It's becoming the, and the editor is the name of the GM in the game. It's becoming the editor's toolkit. It's a little pile of mean stuff that the editor can spend on things and make things horrible for the heroes.
Yeah, so it's been pretty cool. Joe, mostly Joe, has been our GM, and we've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks, so I'm really looking forward to getting back to it and see what happens next.
Cool. You have to remind me to throw a whole bunch of new stuff in your direction just so you can have fun playing with it. But I think in general that your feedback, especially from you guys about certain areas, was great. And, you know, I've said this to people in the past, the reason why I don't like to typically do a too much open beta testing, just showing people online what's going on, is that occasionally folks form an impression about what the game's going to be like based on these early versions of the rules, and then later on they come back to it and go, well, you know, I'm not going to buy that book because, you know, I didn't like the first part of that play test.
That makes a lot of sense, and if I may say so, at the risk of overpraising you, but, you know, you are on a podcast, so it seems like a good time. I very much appreciated your lack of fidelity to your own ideas.
Yep.
I've worked with game designers in the past. I've even been employed as a game designer. And one thing that can really get in the way is when you have a good idea, and it's certainly a problem I've had in the past, you have an idea that is good, but maybe it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
That it's not, just because it's good doesn't mean it's going to be today's good idea. And it can be very hard to let go. And I've been very impressed with, I guess you personally, but maybe it's Margaret White's or the Marvel Heroes team in a broader sense, to just sort of, oh, is that not working? Let's throw that out. Let's try something else. Mm-hmm. Let's try this. I think that's there's something very healthy about that. And you can really see how it leads to a very dynamic production. I've done playtesting in the past and for other products, and you know, very often when people say, has this been playtested, what they really mean is, when it was done, showed it to some friends, and they tried it, and they said it was okay.
Yeah.
That's not the same, and that can help, because you can still catch problems that way, but it's not the same as really having a dynamic process where you throw out ideas, and you let the playtesters try it, and you say, well, I knew that wouldn't work, but we had to give it a try, and it takes a certain courage, I think, because as I understand, you know, this product is coming out in January or February.
Yep, February.
And it takes, I think, a certain courage on the part of a design team to be willing to sort of just keep pushing at the edges and trying to find the right game, as opposed to sort of deciding that you have the right game. And I think you guys deserve a lot of credit for that. Unless the game turns out bad, and then I'll disavow.
There's one of my favorite stories or fables or whatever is the idea of the sculptor who was carving an elephant. And,
right.
Yes. And someone came along and they asked him how he was able to do it because he was just doing such a great job. He would carve an elephant out of a block of marble and he'd repeat it over and over again. There'd always be wonderful looking elephants. And when asked what his method was, what his process was, he said he would just use his chisel and hammer to knock off bits that weren't elephant. And I think what we do in game design sometimes is we just know what we want to get to. We don't necessarily know exactly how it's going to end up. We just get to keep knocking off the parts that aren't elephant. So that's what I'm doing with marble. I mean, if they don't seem to be marble, I have to knock them off. If it doesn't work, I try something else.
I have the same story, but it goes a little bit differently. I always say that everyone has, 10 game designs in their heads, but only two of them are good, and they're not laid out in the order you would prefer.
Right. Right.
You kind of have to, you just have to be willing to keep writing and keep digging through until you get to something that, oh, hey, I could actually use this.
Yeah.
I had a creative writing teacher, actually, Troy Hickman. He's done some work for Top Cow Comics. Common Grounds was his big breakout. Said you have to write all your bad stories before you can write your good ones.
Absolutely.
And then sometimes you still write bad ones. But, yeah, on the playtesting tip, I think you make a good point, Stacey. A fellow I really like, Ben Robbins. He's at Lame Mage Press. His blog is arsluddy.lamemage.com. He's a big proponent of playtesting for just the reasons that you mentioned. I mean, it's easy as a writer to get your ego invested in an idea or concept and think that it's, you know, it's the one true way. And, you know, playtesting even of adventures, you know, or supplements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you really know if your idea is going to work. I compare it to doing stand-up, which I used to a long, long time ago. I mean, because there is stuff that's hilarious in my head. And then I say it out loud, and it's just crickets. So, you know. And
you have to be willing to say the audience is wrong and move on.
Mm-hmm. Or the audience is right, and you should just get a clue sometimes.
Well, either way, so long as you do the moving on step.
Right.
So, well, hey, guys, we've been talking for about an hour, and oh, my God, this is going really fast, hasn't it?
It has been pretty quick, yeah. Gosh.
Yeah.
We started talking, yeah, it was about 50 minutes ago, 45, 50, so wow. But you're a heck of a conversationist, Cam Banks. Time just flows by.
Yeah, well, what can I say?
a charming man of many talents. Well, hey, do we have anything else we want to touch on before we call it a podcast? Stacey, do you have any more questions?
No.
Are you sure?
No. I think that covers things well. I'm very much looking forward to the next round of playtesting, but you know, the less said, the better.
Okay. So, Cam, will we touch on Watchtower Report, which is coming out in PDF, hopefully in November or possibly early December? We touched on the Marvel RPG, which will be a heartbreaking work of staggering genius when it's released in early 2012.
You mentioned the Smallville Yearbook.
Yep, which is already available.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Anything else you'd like to touch on?
And Dragon Brigade, when are we going to see that?
Right. That's kind of more or less coming out simultaneously with Marvel, I think, at this point. We're still working on getting it to work as best as we can. And since I'm not working on it right now, I have my assistant developer, Adam Minnie, who is working on that and doing a great job.
And you want to give us a hint as to what's being changed from the quick start? I've been given the impression that there's some real alterations coming.
Yeah, some things mainly in the realm of how to do things outside of just the usual stab. kind of approximating the idea of relationships, but more about attachments to things, which is important in the novels that Margaret and Bob have written. And, you know, where you need to sort of look at things in terms of not just personal characters, but the larger global influence that people have. And all of that is about the connections that go back and forth between people and places and so on. So I think we're working on more on that. And that's stuff that wasn't really in the quick start because it wasn't necessary for that adventure. So sure. I think you'll find more stuff in the background and only a few minor twinges to the way the game works, I think.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
All right. Well, hey, Cam, I know you're a very busy man. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. I appreciate you offering to have me on. Very, very enjoy doing podcast interviews.
Well,
it's fun.
Love having you on, Stacey. Really appreciate your time.
It was a great pleasure. Very nice talking to both of you.
Okay. Well, hey, folks, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the BAMF Podcast.
Cool. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.